Today on Movie Wallers, we talk about Money Monster and The Nice Guys. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings, all.
Hello.
Hello.
Still trying to catch our groove for this year, aren't we? Kind of disjointed.
Yes.
It's about a month out, I think, from our last recording session, so kind of a bit of a catch-up of some movies that we've seen but not reviewed.
And happy to be together again.
And yes indeed.
Yeah. I mean, we're together always, Joe. Well, but I mean, happy to be recording.
No, we had the good fortune of going to London to see Rashmi's niece get married, which was a lovely, lovely, lovely affair. So
it was.
That's part of the reason.
Emotional.
Plus.
But happy.
Yes.
Yet sad.
Why sad?
Yet happy.
It wasn't sad. It was
fun. No, it wasn't. It wasn't sad. It was emotional.
It was beautiful.
It was.
She looked lovely.
Yes.
And then we've just been crazy with work. I know, Rashmi, you've been to Chicago traveling. So, yes, life has gotten away from us, as have these podcasts. But thank you for persevering and still tuning into Movie Wallers. So,
movies, if you are.
And movies keep us sane.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank God for sanity.
Exactly.
I would have lost it by now if I wasn't obsessively watching movies.
Isn't it true?
Yeah.
I know. I get on planes now and I've watched 85 to 90% of everything that's showing.
Well, we crave them. It was so funny. Yesterday, Rashmi, like, we woke up and Rashmi's like,
I've got
let's
a plan.
Let's go to the theater and catch like a couple of things that we hadn't watched. So we watched the Greta Gerwig one and The Nice Guys, Maggie's Plan and The Nice Guys.
And which we're reviewing today. And I know, Yazdi, you've been binge-watching too, right?
Yes, yes. I've been trying to catch everything that I can in the last couple of weeks. And it was the weirdest thing. Yesterday, I wanted to see a movie and there really was nothing, you know, that I hadn't already seen.
Right.
Which is
good.
But there is a couple, you know.
Yeah.
I know there's at least a couple of movies.
And then there's always that lag between like a movie leaving the theater and coming onto Netflix streaming. So
yeah.
Did you see how I did that segue?
Beautifully done. Speaking of which, it's time for our segment, I Can't Find Anything to Watch on Netflix. And this is just our weekly, just whatever's been in our queue, things that we've been watching, things that we think you might like. So, Yazdi, are you ready with a pick?
I am. My pick for this episode is a movie called The Last 5 Years. And I saw this at, I believe it was the Toronto Film Festival. Last year, and it's a musical, and I don't usually recommend musicals. I don't inherently.
Oh, the Anna Kendrick one.
Anna Kendrick
one. Yes, I remember you speaking about this.
Yeah, and this is not one. You know, I don't go out of my way to seek musicals. I don't really live for them. Not that I don't enjoy them, but there is a lot of things to recommend for this one. For one thing, this is a musical in that it's pretty much sung all the way through. But it's not like, you know, open the door, you know, here's a spoon of sugar. You know, they don't literally sing it, but it's a series of full-out songs which are run back to back. And when I watched the movie, I had a really hard time understanding it because it was all over the place. It was like, well, wait a minute, they have broken up, but here they are together. What's going on? And it took me a while to realize the structure of the movie, which is essentially, it's about 5 years in a relationship between a guy and a girl. And the guy is seeing it from the time that they first met, and the movie's kind of moving forward in time.
I remember this now.
The girl is seeing it from the time they broke up, and it's going backwards in time, and it alternates. So it can be very disconcerting when you initially see it, but now that you know what the premise is, enjoy it for, watch this movie and enjoy it for how clever it is. It's based on a very, very beloved stage play, and it's very play-like, but gosh, if you love Anna Kendrick, then you have to see it. She's in this the whole time, and she's such a triple threat. I mean, she's a great actor. She sings great, and she can dance with the best of them. And it really puts her and Jeremy Jordan, who is the guy who is the male lead in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just the two of them. there are at least two or three musical numbers which are like jaw-droppingly witty. I mean, I was just like, I started laughing and I couldn't stop laughing and I couldn't wait. I really didn't want that musical number to end because it was so funny. I think one is called Summer in Ohio. But anyway, go see it, even if you don't like musicals. See it for the structure. See it for Anna Kendrick. See it to just have a good couple hours of fun. The last five years.
And another example of one that you had seen a while ago in a film festival and is now made its way to Netflix. So great recommendation.
Rashmi, what's your pick?
I'm actually doing something that I've never done before, which is I'm recommending a movie that I saw when I was very, very young. This is like an old classic. It's called Three Coins in the Fountain. It's directed by Jean Negulesco. It was actually a pick for a Best Movie Oscar way back in 1954. Which sounds a little dull, but this is a delightful movie, because it's in my favorite city of Rome and the Trevi Fountain. And the second thing is it's kind of like a romantic comedy about three girls who decide that they want to end their singledom and they're going to toss these coins into a fountain and things don't go as planned. It's just a delightful, sweet, fun movie. I remember watching it on a rainy Sunday afternoon with my mom when I was very, very young and it having a really marked effect on me. So Three Coins in the Fountain, an Lovely. Old classic.
And my pick is a movie that I watched when Rashmi was last out of town, which is a documentary all about the car, the Mustang. Kind of a movie for boys, I know. It's a little bit History Channel, I do admit, but it's a great movie. It's called A Faster Horse, directed by David Gelb. And really, this talks about the history of that quintessentially blue-collar muscle car, the Ford Mustang, how it came to be, the various iterations, what it has, what meaning it has to us culturally. And if you're kind of a petrol head, it's just a blast. I mean, it's kind of really... for me, I'm not really a Mustang aficionado. I've never really been in... I mean, you know, cars are kind of my thing, but, you know, muscle cars have never been kind of one of those things that I've followed. And just seeing the 50-year history of this car that really did change, you know, the way that... changed everything about, you know, cars in Detroit and made them cool and made them accessible and cheap. Just a fascinating movie. Well, totally worth your while.
Even as you were talking, I was thinking, why does David Gelb sound familiar? And I looked him up and he's the director of Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
That's right. That's
so, which we all love. I think we all love. I love that movie so much.
And we just watched a recent documentary directed by him too, right?
Chef's Table? Was it?
No, I can't remember.
Okay.
But I remember thinking, oh, that's why we liked it, because it was directed by him.
Mm. He had a hand in it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so again, let's recap. So A Faster Horse.
Three Coins in the Fountain.
The Last 5 Years.
There is no excuse. Go and find some time if you're not watching any of the fabulous football tournaments that are on TV right now. Go grab one of those movies on Netflix. Okay, so two movies to review this week. Money Monster and The Nice Guys. Where shall we start?
Money Monster.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, so financial TV host Lee Gates and his producer Patty are put in an extreme situation when an irate investor takes over their studio. I think that's really all I want to say about this movie. The trailers have been playing for a while. This has been out in the cinemas. And again, like you said, we're catching up. This is directed by Jodie Foster. And it's written by Jamie Linden and Alan Dufour, amongst some others. And then it stars George Clooney, Julia Roberts, and Jack O'Donnell with a pretty good supporting cast. So... worth the green. Joe, why don't you go first?
So, I mean, this movie is it's entertaining in the moment. I think the issue I had with it ultimately was that its treatment of the material as serious as it was came across as very light, and I don't know that it got to the core of the issue that I think it was trying to tackle, which was this, you know, socio-political commentary on Wall Street. And it, you know, it felt very contrived ultimately, and lost a little bit there for me. So great performances by all involved, but ultimately it lacked the kind of tension that this hostage setup that the movie has, I think, should have had. There was no present sense of danger for anyone.
Yes, D.
Yeah, so I kind of disagree a little bit with Joe, because I actually went into this movie with very low expectations. I thought it would be kind of a silly spoof of, you know, and it really starts off that way, you know, of the financial world and about capitalism Kramer. And all of that. Yeah. But I actually was surprised at how engaged I was through it. And I actually found it reasonably well paced. It kind of felt taut to me. And, you know, the whole premise of the movie is that this guy shows up at the studio and he's had a, you know, he's had a financial fallout as a result of a recommendation made by this...
this TV financial mogul.
Right, this TV financial mogul slash clown. And, you know, he holds them kind of hostage. And you know, I was like, where is this movie going to go from here? And I was surprised at where it went. It went to places I didn't necessarily expect it to. And there's this whole other side story related to, you know, the supposed bad guy played by Dominic West. And I think that kind of was handled very well. And the movie's had a bit of a beating, I think, at the box office. It's been kind of written off as one of those disposable movies. And I think it's a little bit better than that.
I'm probably somewhere halfway between the two of you. I think the idea has more potential than finally gets delivered. But that's not to say it's a bad movie. I mean, you do get to watch pros like George Clooney and Julia Roberts doing their thing so well. And that's good to watch. It's always good to watch. I was just hoping for a bit more depth, Joe, like you, in the story than I got based on the trailers. I didn't even remember the hostage situation, which is a weird thing to say. That's not what was kind of ingrained on my brain as the final premise of the movie, in a way.
Yeah, I mean, the Clooney character, I think, for me, was what didn't work here. He was too cliche in his self-preservation instinct. And I don't think he ever... It felt like he didn't really learn anything throughout the movie. I mean, obviously, there was the whole... I don't want to get into spoilers, but there was just the whole sequence of events, yeah. Kind of, you know, leads him to learning some lessons and reflecting on who he is. But I never got that sense that he had that about turn. And I think the way that the movie tries to resolve itself towards the end is it got a little bit silly. You know, the whole I started to not believe. I mean, I had a hard time believing in the universe anyway, but towards the end, it was almost making me giggle with disbelief in the sense. So it wasn't. I wanted at that point to really have my heart in my mouth, you know, my chest pounding and arms sweaty with kind of the danger around, the imminent danger for everyone, and it didn't go in that direction. So, but that said, it was very the pacing was great, and I will give you that. You know, I did read that Jodie Foster, you know, doesn't like to make long movies. She always aims for this 90 minutes, and I'm glad with this particular one that she did, because it kept the movie moving along nicely. But yeah, just not tense enough.
I'm surprised the Bernie Sanders campaign did not kind of adopt this movie and force everybody, you know, who's a Bernie right. believer to watch it, because it kind of, not to get all political about this, but it's, you know, I mean, my pet peeve always is that, you know, just because it's not legal, you know, behavior, or just because it is legal, behavior is justified in the name of capitalism. A lot of very aberrant behavior goes away by saying, well, that's how business works. That's how capitalism right. works. And the movie kind of touches on that, and I kind of like that, because, you know, I won't get on my soapbox, but I think big corporations should have the slightest, you know, social responsibility, a little bit of a soul to them. And, you know, when they abandon that in the name of, you know, the bottom line, I think that's where a lot of, you know, this big pull between the 1%ers and 99%, all of this stuff comes from. So I think the movie kind of touches on that. I do agree that it is kind of too frothy for that theme. But I think Foster was intentionally trying to make an unrealistic movie. She was trying to make a movie, kind of a fun movie you would watch with your whole family one afternoon. So it's almost deliberately in the movie universe. It doesn't really feel very real. But I think, you know, we underestimate the power of good actors who can do magic. And for me, any movie which has George Clooney and Julia Roberts is worth a trip to the cinema. I mean, they're both, I mean, if anybody questions what good actors can do, I mean, especially Julia Roberts, I think, who I can't wait to become just a full-out character actor. I just want her to play little parts in movies because she's always so, you know, so invested in the role, and she's so good here, and she's not trying to be the cute, you know, she's moved on.
No, she's great.
And she's so good in that. So just from that alone for me was what, and their chemistry is brilliant.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I think that's where I have the problem. Like Joe was saying, just to build on what Joe was saying, Yazdi, I think the problem for me was it felt like they wrote themselves into a corner and couldn't get out of that corner. And so it was almost, the ending for me was almost like, oh, and then it was all a dream, even though it's not. And that's not the way the movie goes. But it was all too tidy and wrapped up and not predictable in any way. I was kind of surprised by the ending. But I really wanted that. Yeah, I think it's tension. There was so much tension missing. And I think the parts where we're in the studio worked a bit better than when we're outside the studio. Because then it all went a little bit crazy. But it's not a bad movie, right? It's not a bad movie at all. I just think it lacks emotional depth and story depth. And I think Jodie Foster has done a really efficient job. She gets in, does her thing, and gets out.
You know, I mean, I struggle with this because oftentimes I find myself criticizing a movie for what I wanted it to be versus what the movie set out to be. And I think that's one of these cases here where, you know, I wanted, you know, drama, tension, and we didn't, you know, the movie's treatment of it, you know, were these kind of cliche type situations where we have effectively evil corp, you know, versus, yeah. You know, honest, yeah. Hardworking blue collar guy, who gets squashed, and, you know, the Clooney character who, you know, they're all cartoon caricatures of what these types of situations could be in real life. And again, that I think is intentional. It's more playful than it needs to be. This isn't a true to life drama. This isn't based on a real story. So fair enough. But not what I wanted it to be.
I know exactly what you mean. I think a lot of people were trying to position this movie as like this generation's answer to the movie Network from the late 70s.
Right.
And, you know, that is considered by many to be one of the best movies ever made, and rightly so. And I think this movie doesn't nearly have either the emotional intensity of Network, or it doesn't really speak to how we live now. You know, which Network did at that time. It was kind of a representation of, you know, what was happening in television and how, mm-hmm. you know, it was so empty and it had sold a soul to, you know, for greed and so forth. And but again, as a fun movie, I don't know, there's something very clean and very square about Money Monster. And I, you know, sometimes you want to watch a square movie.
Yeah.
So...
Score it.
So for me, it's somewhere between a 6 and a 7, and only because this movie's got such a beating, both commercially as well as from the critics, I'll be more generous and give it a 7 out of 10, yeah.
So I don't think it's a total waste of time or money. I just think it's not a rush out and see, but it's a good movie with great acting. Yeah, 6 out of 10. Joe?
6 for me as well, only because it's not what I want it to be, and I can't blame it for that, but it ultimately comes off as... too disposable for a topic that I think deserves more heft, more weight. Mm-hmm. All right, movie number 2 is The Nice Guys. So, Yazdi, you want to tell us all about The Nice Guys?
Yeah, so Shane Black has been in Hollywood for a long time. He started off as a writer in the late 80s, and he kind of broke off to direct his first film, also written by him, which was Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, a movie which came out, gosh, it's hard to believe, more than 10 years ago now, with Robert Downey Jr. before his ascent in movie stardom. But
and didn't he have a hand in the Lethal Weapon movies?
He wrote all the Lethal Weapon
movies.
Okay,
yeah, because so I remember his name from that, because I
yeah.
remember noticing him then. I loved those movies.
Yeah, and I think Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is kind of a cult favorite now amongst, you know, people who love movies, and it's so fun. It's got James Gandolfini in it. But anyway, he went on then subsequently, to everybody's surprise, he went on to direct a big commercial enterprise such as Iron Man 3. And here he is now with the next movie that has been written and directed by him, and it is The Nice Guys. And The Nice Guys stars Russell Crowe as well as Ryan Gosling Jr. as... Ryan Gosling Jr.? No, just Ryan Gosling. I don't know where the Jr. came from.
Robert
Downey Jr.'s Junior got left over in my head.
I think it was syllabically funny. Similar.
Yes. Similar, yes. But essentially, it's a story set in the late 1970s, and both Crowe and Gosling play these mismatched, comical private investigators who are trying to find out what happened to a missing girl who everybody seems to be looking out searching for. Like I said, the movie is directed by Shane Black, and Anthony Bogarazzi shares writing credits with Shane Black. And the movie has, you know, other than Crowe and Gosling, it's got Matt Bomer, it's got Angourie Rice and Keith David. And this movie is done pretty well critically. What did you guys think about it, The Nice Guys?
So I had a lot of trouble with this one. Tonally, I think I couldn't understand what it was supposed to be. It had moments of seriousness. It was definitely R-rated adult. And at the same time, it almost had this kind of slapstick, goofy undertone. So I couldn't put it together, and I couldn't connect with it in the way that I think so many critics and audiences seem to be. So I'll say right off the bat, I think I'm the outlier here, but this movie didn't work well for me at all. I had fun with the performances. I think they, you know, Crowe, Gosling, I love the daughter in the movie. I forget the name of the actress.
Angourie Rice.
She's a delight to watch, and she felt very much like Penny from the Mr. Gadget series, that she was the one really doing the crime fighting. But this felt a little messy to me.
So I think I'm in the outlier box with you, Joe. I think this is more like a Nancy Drew Scooby-Doo caper than something I could really buy into. I think it's a fun buddy genre movie in the moment, but it's too light and frothy. And frankly, it's trying too hard to give me anything to hold on to. And I mean, I was really confused. I couldn't even understand what I was watching for a good 2/3 of the movie. I couldn't even figure out what's going on, really. But it's fun.
Yeah, so you're going to love this, I bet.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best movies of the year.
Oh, really?
I knew it.
Yeah, I do. I think it's all about the tone. I mean, right? I mean, I've always said that watching a movie is like taking your dog for a walk. And sometimes you let the dog walk you, and sometimes you fight it, and you make it. You take the dog where you want to. I just went with this dog. And I've seen this movie twice now, and I just enjoyed it.
God.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it like within a week after I saw it the first time. I think just minute by minute, it seems to be written. Like if somebody were to make a movie for me, then it would be The Nice Guys. I mean, I just chuckled, and I was filled with delight, and I was just amazed at how clever it was at every point. And I don't know. I think of it, it kind of lives in the same universe as The Lincoln Lawyer. Remember that movie with Matthew McConaughey?
God. Yes, Dee.
Yes.
Insulting The Lincoln Lawyer.
No, it does. It's kind of, only it's funnier. I mean, you know, The Lincoln Lawyer was quite serious, but it's kind of set in that late 70s, you know, ka-ching, you know, kind of that bam-chicka-bam-chicka universe. And, you know, it's about these corrupt, it's about a very, very corrupt Los Angeles, and it's about the hijinks that these two individuals get into, and it's just so much fun, and it's clever, and you know, it's winking, and I don't know. I mean, I saw this movie and I was ready for a sequel right there. I wanted to watch The Nice Guys Part 2 immediately after this one was over.
I'm really shocked. I think it lives in the same universe as something like Columbo or
no.
Like TJ Hooker or Magnum PI. I think it's trying to be like that. I can almost see this doing better as a TV show than a movie in some ways. I did like the winkiness. I did chuckle. I'm not saying it's not funny, but it took too many leaps for me. I didn't understand really what was going on to start with. And I think it just kept jumping to these, like, scene to scene to scene, and I couldn't get the thread. And then it just felt very derivative. There was nothing original about it in my mind. And then it was hyper-violent. I mean, bone-crunchingly violent.
But not overly so, very sparingly. When it is, it's very violent.
I don't know. I think I kind of like had to look away from the screen because it was so bone crunching.
Yeah, and that's where the disconnect lies for me. I mean, I think it has these very serious moments, right? The violence is not funny, right? But then every now and then you get these kind of clown moments where, you know, somebody falls out of a hotel and lands in a swimming pool, and you know that those kind of things.
I love that. Yeah.
Well, you know, it jumps from kind of gritty violence to kind of slapstick, you know, fall off a wall, roll down a hill type thing, and I couldn't. You're right, Yeti. The dog analogy is brilliant because I was fighting this dog every step of the way. I was like, where are you taking me?
Right.
And what am I doing here? And I don't want to go in this direction. And I think that struggle persisted throughout the whole movie because every time I thought I was in a comfortable place, thinking, oh, okay, I get it now, it would do something else. And I think maybe in the right moment, it would have been a little bit more effective. I think had we not just seen the delightful Maggie's plan, I know that's a spoiler, but I think this movie would have maybe had a little bit more impact. It just felt confused and muddled and just tonally all over the place. And everything here is done well. You know, the performances are great.
Good chemistry.
Bought the actors, but ultimately it's just absurd in places and not quite believable. In a movie that I think is at some point, some level, trying to be.
But I think it's no more believable. I mean, so I'll get to what you're saying in just a second. I was wondering why I like this movie so much. Mm-hmm. And, if there is one thing I have to pick that I like the most about this movie, it's the writing. I think the writing is so good here. And I was like, why did I like this so much? And then I went back and looked up Shane Black. And then, of course, he's written Lethal Weapon. All
which
of the three
I
movies, which it has exactly the same tone. I mean, it's kind of funny, but it exists in its own movie universe. It's not trying to be about crime in a particular era. It's an entertainer. So it just wants you to entertain you by giving you a good whodunit, crime, pulpy mystery, but it's also winking.
But then it takes such leaps, Yazdi, with the story. I mean, you say you like the story, but then, I mean, you know, you start...
No, not the story, the writing.
Oh, the writing, yeah. And I
the
think
dialogue
there's some good,
is great.
There is some good dialogue. And again, you know, to Joe's point, the relationship with the kid is great. But I think the piece that's missing for me is if this is that kind of buddy cop genre, you know, if this is another addition to that genre, it goes from... It just takes leaps in that relationship. If you think about that relationship right from the first scene when Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling, when the characters meet, to the next time they're together, and then finally when, you know, they're on this journey, it just takes such leaps without kind of giving you anything to hold on to say this is real in this universe even. And then, yeah, I get that it's like Lethal Weapon, but we saw Lethal Weapon 20 years ago. So give us something new. I just didn't feel anything new. I like the homage to the 70s. That's great. I think the production was great. But I just think it didn't give me anything to hang on to. I just couldn't buy into what we were watching.
I don't think it's meant to give you anything. It's just a good time at the movies, I think. It's just one of, like you said, Columbo. It's meant to be an extended detective episode about
yeah,
a caper.
Yeah, so it's an
corruption.
Episode, I think. Yeah, right. I think it's an episode
it
rather than a movie.
A caper.
And I think that's not necessarily to its detriment.
No, but like movies like American Hustle, who try and do the same sort of thing, do it so much better.
Oh God! Give me 10 the nice guys over one American Hustle. But I think it's all a question.
On that, yes, you and I have fully agreed. I hated American Hustle.
I mean, when was the last time you saw a movie where somebody's teenage daughter had such an important role?
I loved her.
I mean, it would have been so easy to make it just about these two bumbling detectives, you know, just fumbling around and running through. But I love that. As precocious as their teenage daughter is, she's never annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
You know, and
great performance.
I don't know if it's an actor or if it's the writing or whatever, but I just loved how well she's integrated into this plot, which is fairly adult.
Did any of you watch Inspector Gadget?
Yes.
Because Penny and the dog are the, you know, Inspector Gadget is completely
inept.
Or like
Hong Kong Fooey, the cat in Hong Kong Fooey, right?
Right.
It's always the one who's not.
It felt very cartoony in that regard, where, you know, the real crime busting is done by the person who's ancillary, and the lead detectives aren't too effective in their methods.
Yeah.
But she was great, and I think that was a beautifully original addition to a live action movie, because I think I've seen that thing, like you say, Rashmi, done many times in the cartoon world, but really, really handled well here, and in a way that is absolutely not annoying.
Yeah, and there's this great little piece, and I was really impressed by it the first time I saw it, and I was looking out for it the second time, and it just impressed me as much. There was a great little set piece where the Mac Bomer character comes to the home of Ryan Gosling's daughter, and she's with her friend. They're alone, and he clearly means harm to them, and, you know, neither Russell Crowe or Ryan Gosling are there, and that whole scene is funny, yet it has a really palpable sense of dread, because, you know, you're like, this guy really means harm to them and something nasty is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to do that kind of stuff. I think how many detective movies have we seen? It's very difficult, I think, to do something new and make you care. And I just had a great time. And the other thing which surprised me, although it shouldn't in retrospect, because I think he's one of the best actors of his generation, but Ryan Gosling, I did not know that he had slapstick in him, or that there is a scene which is just like out of a Laurel and Hardy movie. I mean, there's a scene where he tumbles down this house, and maybe it's a spoiler, but he sees something there which is like really shocking. And he does this whole, like, he makes these guttural noises, and he's reacting to this while he's very drunk and he doesn't know. And it's very dangerous to do that stuff if you don't do it well, because you will get laughed at for not being funny. But he somehow manages to make it funny. So good for him. I mean, who knew he can also be very, very funny?
Yeah.
And
agreed.
Russell Crowe, I've missed him. You know, this is a Russell Crowe I like. You know, he's been kind of fallen on the wayside in the last couple of years, and he's in fine form here, I think.
And it suits him well, the overweight, you know,
yeah,
overgrown kind of.
I love how committed he is as
cop,
an actor.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, clearly physically he went through some changes to look the part and be the part, and he inhabits every role. I love him. Yeah.
Okay, so let's wind this one up. So Joe, you go first.
So ultimately, it's a competent piece of work. It's just not quite on my wavelength. I couldn't tune into what it wanted to be. And again, maybe this is just like the other movie. I'm failing everyone as a critic by trying to have the movie be what I would want it to be, as opposed to what I think it was trying to be. So, you know, I'm going to give this another 6 out of 10. I don't think it was not entertaining. I think it is entertaining, but I couldn't decide if it was a comedy, a drama, or some bizarro mix in between. And for that, I can't give it more than a 6.
Yazdi.
So the last time Russell Crowe and Kim Basinger were together, it was in L.A. Confidential. And that was a great movie. I think this movie is as good as that one.
Wow.
I really do. I think it's... Whatever, it doesn't have very high ambitions, but whatever it does it with so much style, so much fun. It's kind of a noir homage. It's pulpy. It's original. It's funny. I really think this is one of the best movies of the year. And I do hope somebody makes a sequel to this. And I hate sequels. 8.5 out of 10, which I'm going to back down to an 8. But maybe a 9 towards the end of the year. I like it so much.
Wow.
I can't wait to get the DVD.
Cool. Wow.
Yeah.
It's nice. That's all. 5 out of 10.
Whoa.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's done incredibly well critically. I mean, I was surprised actually, because I didn't know much about it going in, but in some ways I'm glad. I think if the expectations had been set high for this one, I'd have been very disappointed. But oh well. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yes,
that's
yes,
why
yes.
There are three of us.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, let's wrap up our podcast for today. We have another one to record straight after this. So, Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.